In 1970, Senator Gaylord Nelson founded Earth Day, and he conceived it as a day of environmental teach-ins. People celebrate the Earth around the world, and organizations try and promote environmental citizenship. This year, among the many actions in the first nationwide contest where university campuses compete to reduce the carbon footprints of their students, staff and alumni. And Russell Simmons, the hip-hop pioneer who has influenced music, fashion, finance, television and film, as well as the face of modern philanthropy, is here to discuss the competition and his own efforts to reduce his carbon footprint. And it is a pleasure to welcome him to the show. Hello.
Hi.
So how did you
get
involved?
That's quite an introduction. I think you said it all.
I'm going to say, like, did I miss out anything?
That was so
music,
nice.
Finance, fashion, philanthropy.
Oh my goodness.
So tell us, how did you get involved with this concept?
Well,
with
I got
this
a
contest?
Phone call from my friend Larry Cobb, and he works with the America's Greenest Campus campaign. He asked, would globalgrind.com get involved? You know, I have this political editor who had met with him already, and they were excited. They're sitting in the next room. They're best friends now. He's a political editor, Michael Skolnick, in the back there for globalgrind.com. And so we collaborated, too. And then they just got me somehow. I mean, I've been working on these issues. And so the Obama girl and this team got me to be one of their spokespeople. It's such an amazing thing. And I'm very blessed to have been chosen to be one of their support systems because, you know, young people and also specifically hip-hop, many young people, of course, are amongst the most aware, but they also are the biggest consumers. They have the biggest carbon footprints. And so they should be aware because then they have the future to carry as well. So we've been working on planting more good seeds in their head, little things that we forget. This morning, the first time that I actually brushed my teeth and I turned the water off in between wetting the toothbrush and small, right? But it's good. And then I also got real mad because I was already upset for a month, at least a month. I've been saying it takes too long for my water to get hot. And then today I really got really upset with them. I said, I'm not paying nothing unless you fix this in the whole building.
So how many campuses are actually involved?
Four,
and there are prizes
almost
500 that are going to be
now.
Handed out too, right?
Yeah, we need all 2,000. We need all the college campuses to participate somehow. And we only have 5,000 or 6,000 activists who are aggressively working on it, on these campuses, pushing. But many, many people are participating. And again, it's about close to 500 campuses. But we want more, before. So that's what we're doing. We're trying to stay on our grind, trying to push the idea and get hip-hop. Because they got the biggest brand-building voices. I mean, they decide it's cool to pay attention, And so I use every angle I can think of. I talk a lot this month, all month. We've been talking about the yoga community at the Jiva Mukti Center, we talk about Stiram Sukham Asanam, and that's, the 33rd Sutra, and it's steady, joyful pose, right? And from that grows, everything comes from that kind of relationship and the idea of being connected. As a yogi, and as a Christian or a Jew or Muslim, we all talk about being connected.
And you're also a vegan as well.
I'm a vegan. That's one of the best things you could
do,
right?
How does that reduce your carbon footprint, though?
No, I'm not saying that again. By being a vegan, I mean, look, the greatest cause of my friend is out there putting signs through the window. Being a vegan is, it's like the greatest cause of global warming probably, over anything is like the 9 billion suffering farm animals that are birthed into suffering. And then they put them in your body, make you sick. And then it's just a mess, So we ask kids maybe eat one less hamburger. They don't have to be a vegan, but you eat one less and the next thing you don't want to eat, the farm animals. And you don't want to be part of that suffering, and you don't want to carry that weight, and you don't want to, all the forms of transportation put together are less weight on you and on the environment than the animals, and that's a horrible thing that no one mentions. As a UN report, I didn't make that up. More, all the forms of transportation put together do not equal what the harm you cause by eating animals. Is that another way to say it? I got to frame it differently. But that's the truth, It's not something that we overlook.
Yes, but how do you, as somebody who travels so much, does so much, is a successful businessman, how do you deal with your own sort of travel-related carbon emissions?
I do the best I can. It's funny, this morning I was on one of those MSNBC or maybe Fox or somebody. Anyway. Oh, what about the hypocrites? They were like, I think it was the hypocrites. I mean, you're doing the best you can. At least you're planting seeds. You're doing it. It's like I'm a vegan all the time, right, except when I cheat and eat fish, and I try not to. you know, very seldom, but sometimes I do, you know, like once in a blue moon. And it's like I'm doing the best I can. You know, when they say, and you practice, you know, these things. These are ideas that are, you know, if I could live by them 100%, I'd be enlightened. I wouldn't be worried about this perfect world. I'd be able to see it and wouldn't even act. But in the short term, we do what we can, right?
I'm speaking with Russell Simmons about how to get colleges and universities to reduce their carbon footprints. And you can also check out his website. It's AmericansGreensAtCampus.com.
Go to GlobalGrind.com, okay. And then they will disperse you to two websites. But America's Greenest Campus is one of them. And another one is the one that teaches you how to reduce your footprint.
And you can also find that on our show page at WNYC.org.
Right. Let's go there. That's the official source.
Let's go there.
Source.
That'll keep it nice and easy. So
Everybody got a reason. People, you know, doing good is so funny. Like, yeah, go to globalgrind.com. It's like the voice of hip-hop, right? Go there and you'll learn about our politics, which are probably pretty progressive. And then you got my man from Green Campus wants to know why everyone's got a point. They're all outside in the lobby holding signs up.
Are they really?
Let's go to NPR.com.
Don't let them distract you. But I know that you're also, are you going to be one of the judges for this contest?
Well, the judges, that, you know, the numbers will not, you know, we have the people that will measure the carbon footprint. It's an emphatic, you know, it's a number, you know, it's fact. So I don't have to judge. I may have to show up at the college that wins. Well, to get me a plane to go. I'm just kidding.
You know, April isn't just the month of Earth Day. It's also known as Financial Literacy Month, maybe a fact that a lot of people don't know. And you launched a program called
Unirush Financials. Yeah. It's like somebody came to me. I'll tell you the story of Unirush really quickly. Someone came to me and they said, like, get the rappers to sell phone cards. And I looked at it. And I said, okay. And then we said, we're going to build these phones and make it cheap. And then give the gift of communication. I had a good idea, right, the salesman that I am. And then I looked, there was no gift. It was so expensive for those people who couldn't afford. And the phone cards were just such a waste. And so we created this Rush card. Now, we were the first. We went to Visa. We created this idea. Those people who had to get online to pay their bills and then had to go get check cashing, and they pay sometimes 10 or 15% to cash their check. Then they couldn't rent nothing over the phone or pay their bills over the phone or get a hotel room or a car, anything like that. They were locked out of the American dream. So we created this company, Unirush Financial Services, and that card, the Rush card, was the baby of that business. And so it saves people a lot of money, although it also helps to create credit, which is something that was unheard of, that a debit card would create credit. And for those people who can't get a bank account, they're really, really, 60 million Americans are completely locked out of the American dream. So this is an innovative way.
But what do you say to people who say, you know, this is just too costly and it's pushing people further into debt?
Go to payday loan. We're going to figure out how to get you loans and insurance and everything else. Go and borrow money, or if better yet, get your cash. Go get online for 8 to 12 hours a week and pay your bills. Get your cash. And then, or from a check cash in place where you pay 10%. What we do here, our fees are very high. It's just way, way lower. And if you think predatory, think Western Union or anyone who wires money instead of giving you money.
But do you think that there's any merit to their criticism?
I think that we have innovative ways to save people a lot of money in the system, in the situation they're in. And I think that Walmart, you know, believe me, Walmart is my competitor now. They just got in my business. I didn't have to change my fees because I can't operate anything less, obviously, than what I take. And Walmart's fees are equal to my fees. We are trying, all of us, to come up with innovative ways to beat each other at serving this underserved community. But the old ideas, going to a check cashing place and getting robbed and getting online and being locked out of the American dreams, are not good. And not being able to rebuild credit or have the dignity of having a...
But what do you think the American dream is now, given all of these problems that we've been seeing with a global economic meltdown?
Well, there's so many. American dream is, it's like, for
people,
me...
Do you think people are rethinking it, though?
Well, everyone has a different space that they're in. I leave, you know, like in the middle of this interview, if you don't finish in time, I'm going to my practice. I can't wait to make my morning meditation or my afternoon practice. I don't miss them for nothing. Kind of take the time for myself. And then I realize that they can't give me nothing. There's no dream. There's a little bit of air. You know, that's about it. I'm breathing the same air as the billionaires. I believe it. I have faith in it. And I have, and I only build companies now that I think will help. And a lot, everybody has a way that, you know, some people go off and meditate and inspire people by their life, their inspiration, their great meditators. They teach others to relieve their suffering. that way. But, you know, my way is I run 5 charities. I try to, you know, it's very difficult right now, by the way, raising money. I try to build businesses that I had a fashion business. I remember I still have one in Macy's, but I had a fashion business and they were yelling at me at a college campus. Like, why is it $100 for jeans? So I just launched in Walmart. And I think the idea is brilliant. I worked in 3 years, not because of the economy, right? And I think it's great to make a competitive, you know, my Oxford shirt, you know, is $9. So I'm having a good time with my jeans is 18 raw denim. They look like, so I'm doing that, you know. Mm-hmm. So as a businessman who's grown up, you know, his adult life has been a philanthropist and businessman. I'm trying to find reasons to go to work every day. And the whole idea, and the criticisms, like I tell the critics, you know, on that discussion of Rush Card, go back to that, please do better. I didn't even care if Walmart took me out of business, except they can't. I'm doing the best I can. We're trying our best to find ways to serve those underserved communities, to rebuild their credit and get them access to things that everyone else in America has.
And, you know, in May, one of your latest productions, we know that you're a very busy man. This one is called Brave New Voices, and the finals is going to be shown on HBO on...
Every Sunday they show the other thing beside the finals.
This is on May the 17th at 11.
So, the finals. But yeah. It's been on every Sunday. You can watch HBO or go to HBO On Demand.
Right. Well, what is the series designed to showcase?
Well, a lot of it's about the environment, believe it or not, but it's poets. You know, the poets are great. They always are. You know, the rappers say smart things like F the police or, you know, all kinds of, they say stuff that inspire, that teach you, you know, they say things that make you think. Because, you know, they, for all the finger pointing, you have to realize that they're less sexist, they're less racist, they're less homophobic, they're less gangster than our government's choices have been. They're pretty good. You know, they point out the inconsistencies, you know. They can see you, and they are your reflections of your dirt. When you hide, you know, it's easy to say that the rappers are the bad ones, but they're only reflections of our society's struggles. And most times, they're always on the right side of it. In other words,
do you think it's a good idea, though, to grade, you know, such personal expressions and put them into a competition like this?
Oh, about art and commercial art and people's like and stuff? I've been doing that all my life. I look at the charts. I started a record company when I was a kid, remember? You know, I think it's nice that kids are competing in this way. I think that this personal expression you're referring to, the more popular it is. I run an art foundation. We underwrite programs where kids do this. I think the idea of poetry in the way that the spoken word is really a great, great statement and opportunity for young people. And so the competition is a way to get more into it, and I think it's great.
And these days, you're also an active blogger. You've got regular columns on Huffington Post and Global Grind, you know, among others.
GlobalGrind.com.
Yeah, there you go, GlobalGrind.com. You wrote an open letter to David Paterson this week at the Huffington Post, in which you wrote in support of several policy decisions that he has made.
One that he made because the rappers made them make it. Years ago, we had that rally, and Governor Pataki signed a new bill and gave me the pen, which was a great honor. He only gave it to me because Jay-Z and 50 Cent and Puffy and LL Cool J and amongst, you know, along with them, Hillary Clinton and then Senator Paterson and people came and rallied to change the drug laws that were 30-some-odd years old. And so now the final change has come, and David Paterson is, I talked to him quite a bit. I don't want to get another lobby bill. Another bill I got, like the last bill, was expensive for lobbying. But the idea that he changed those laws, the artist brought a lot of awareness to that horrible situation here.
I'm speaking with Russell Simmons about how to get colleges and universities to reduce their carbon footprints as well as other things, and we'll be back with more after this quick break. I'm speaking with Russell Simmons about how to get In the late 1950s and early 60s, jazz musicians gathered at a loft on 6th Avenue for nightly jam sessions. Sarah Fischko is working on a series about the Jazz Loft, and on Thursday, May the 7th, she will reunite some of those great players for a live concert at the Green Space. And to purchase tickets, go to wnyc.org/thegreenspace. I'm Daljit Dhaliwal, in today for Leonard Lopate, and this is WNYC and wnyc.org. I'm Daljit Dhaliwal, sitting in for Leonard Lopate, and my guest today is Russell Simmons, and we're talking about colleges and universities and how they can reduce their carbon footprints, as well as a variety of other subjects. And before we went to the break, we were talking about Patterson, about the several policy decisions that
he's made. Oh my God,
made.
I got a flashback.
You're getting a flashback. Do you think that he's getting
a
bad rap?
Made that the Beastie Boys song?
That was.
I'm a vegan now and stuff, but you know, 20, 30 years ago. Anyway.
Patterson, bad
gay
rap.
Rights. Yeah, I think that's nice that he had the courage to propose that bill. If he can negotiate it with the Senate and with the Assembly, it would be great if he could have gay marriage come here. But, you know, that really is, it takes effort as well as, you know, the courage to say you stand up for it. It takes time, and I know they say time is limited. But in this year, if he would do small things, I'm part of the David Lynch Foundation, and I have a school in Africa where kids are meditators, a free college in CETA in Africa, and these kids in Johannesburg, and these kids are meditators. And in schools that were built in 60 Minutes and other places have talked about the schools in America where meditation has taken schools from the worst in Detroit to one of the best, or in Connecticut or various different places. We have such great research. UCLA and other places have studied these schools, they see traumatic. So maybe he could put research, he could put meditation in schools. He could work, maybe he could tell them to stop selling sugar water.
What about Prop 8 in California, though? Do you think that?
Maybe. I think Arnold did a decent job in drugs. What do you mean?
Well, I mean, what do you think of Prop 8 in California in particular?
I worked hard for it. I feel terrible that didn't get through.
And
that did get through, that there was a Proposition 8 banning. That's horrible.
And reports that it was the African-American vote that helped pass the ban on same-sex marriage.
Yeah, so hurt people. What can I tell you? I don't know how to respond. I'm not, just because I'm African-American, I can't respond for all of them. I'm a human being, and I'm going to tell you something. I heard that the research is not quite right. But, you know, religious people, sometimes. And so I'm sorry that they didn't support gay rights. You know, I mean, people are, what do we care? What do we care if people have their own freedom? If it infringes on your own ability, your own happiness, then maybe we should legislate. But if it doesn't, then we should leave it alone. That's my opinion. And so, yeah, I definitely support gay marriage. And I just think it's, you know, it's bad, you know, that people who have been through so much discrimination, I could probably say because I'm black, you know, it's kind of rude. You know, I just feel bad. He's been through so much. We have, you know, not me personally, but I guess they chased me home from school. I was black. But just, you know, I just feel bad about it. I'm sorry. I wish that we could get the gay, that they could get married here.
Were you a big Barack Obama supporter?
Yeah, I worked hard as hell for him, traveled around the country.
What did you do? What did you say?
Well, I talked about, you know, typical things yogis say about him. I like the idea that he was... that he's speaking to these countries, he's doing what he said. I guess the fear is allowing him great freedom to working on the green stuff, except for the coal thing lately. It's bothered me. All the research for, you know, the coal thing, that's, you know, clean carbon. That's not possible. Like a clean cigarette. You can't have a clean cigarette, can you? So, but other than that, I mean, he's done everything. And even then, he promised he'd spend money on that crap. But everything else is really good, don't you think? What President Obama is doing, the investments in education and in people in general, you know, and in green jobs and his dialogue that he's creating and
what
the efforts
do you
he's
think
making
about,
around the world that are so good, you know, such great statements, you know, of courage.
How do you think he's going to follow through on those statements then? I mean, especially, say, for example, about the the outreach that he wants to do with the Muslim Arab world, that he doesn't want to make the war on terror sound like a war against Islam.
War on drugs. Did we win that? The war on drugs. War is a horrible word, right? War. For what? You don't fight fire with fire all the time. If you're smart, you know, if you don't want to just stamp something out for a week, if you want to get rid of it, you have to create a different energy. And the dialogue that he's having with the Muslim community is reminding some Muslims that they're not at war. All the moderate Muslim world, some great part of it, we've lost to more, you know, aggressive action on their part. They want the world to be better, but they don't know how to make it better except to fight, because we sometimes push some of them in the corner. And we've multiplied the numbers of people in the Muslim world who are angry. And so it takes a person with courage to reach out and do the opposite. You know, when you're going the wrong way, you get off the train, go to the other side, and go the other way. President Obama represents the rise of consciousness that you see happening all over this country. All the books, you know how many books have been sold? 35 million people downloaded the New Earth. Just basic ideas that are the principles behind all the religions. You know, I'm the chairman of the Foundation for Ethnic Understanding. And Rabbi Snyder, who's the chairman of the World Jewish Congress, is my president. And we work on Muslim-Jewish dialogue. And we have now programs around America, 52 of them in America, where imams speak in synagogues and rabbis speak in mosques. And now we're spreading the programs all over the world. And no one does it. It seemed like a simple idea. The children of Abraham, the same children, same religious rap, same spiritual rap. That they didn't have. I've seen powerful rabbis come out of a room and say, "What a nice guy. He's a leader of thousands and maybe hundreds of thousands of Muslims. He's a sweet spiritual man. Of course he's a nice guy." So this is the dialogue that we have to push. Now the world is small. And also, your violence won't work. You can't stomp out an angry attitude with one big bomb. Terrorism and other reasons for them to come back at you. You can't escape the karmic result for two generations.
What about you, though? How much do you think that you've changed from the kind of person you were? Just listening to that last piece of music that we played,
like
you seemed in a little bit of a shock from hearing it. You seemed like you were a little sort of, you know, it was a blast back to the past. I mean, do you miss anything at all?
I miss anything. Like, you mean my old behavior?
Well, just, you know,
I learned,
terms of
you know, you learn over a period of time. I used to like being out late and drunk or high. And now I like
you don't
my
do that
6
anymore?
O'clock a.m., my 6 a.m. meditation. I like clarity. And I find there's even a greater high in clarity. But that's experience teaches you some of this. I wouldn't trade those experiences for anything. I used to like a lot of stuff, you know. That's just the way I was, you know. And I think I've grown to like different things. That's just the difference. I've changed, I guess. I've learned some things that it's funny that all the stuff that I learned was told to me by my mother, my preacher, by any rabbi or imam would tell me, any prophet told them, anybody said, all of them said the same stuff over and over again. But, you know, you're here to perfect, to learn to operate in order. So I operate a little more in order now than then. So I have changed.
So is there sort of like a single sort of defining issue that you care very, very passionately about? I mean, I know we've been talking about the environment. Would you say that is it?
The seat of all of the things that I care about is in the rise of human consciousness, that people would be more awake and conscious. To be fully awake, it's impossible that you want to abuse animals or the environment or each other. It's impossible because you operate from a state where you're less fearful and you do good works. You can't help it.
I'm Daljit Dhaliwal in today for Leonard Lopate, and I'm speaking with Russell Simmons about how to get colleges and universities to reduce their carbon footprints, and we've been talking about lots of things. It's very much as of a free-flowing sort of discussion. And let me ask you, Global Grind, what was the purpose of that?
It was, you know, I about 8 years ago, I did something called 360 Hip Hop, and it ended up, because of technology and advertisers, and they weren't there, so it ended up like becoming part of another site, and lots of money was spent, went down the drain. We got some back recently for the stock we traded somewhere, but so I started again, And, you know, we have this idea of godfathering all of the hip-hop and other sites that suit the hip-hop community. So there's a politics section. There's a entertainment section. There's a music section. There's a gossip section. So it's all, but yet it takes all of the RSS feeds from all of the hot sites, and it kind of brokers what's important. But then we have the artists that blog, and people of interest to the hip-hop community that blog, interest, except they don't talk to these websites. They don't talk to these gossip or other kind of entertainment places because they're so mean, and so our site is decidedly more upbeat. So everybody from, you know, Nas to T.I. to these artists write their blogs, and it gets out, you know.
Mm. Are they different, though, from the ones that you already have?
Yeah, because now they're getting visibility. So if Aubrey O'Day writes something that's sweet and uplifting, then we know a different Aubrey O'Day than what Perez Hilton sells. If the governor, I was in yoga the other day, not too long ago. You probably know about this story. I was in yoga. I saw a little girl who I've seen before, a short girl, and it was the governor's ex-girl, you know, Ashley Dupree. And then she wrote a blog about how she couldn't make any money, not one bit of money, off her experiences, but she wanted to write an inspirational book.
Okay,
and that book
you.
Now is because
gotta,
of her blog. Now they're fighting
over it. Got to leave
it
there. Russell Simmons, thank you very much for joining us.
Why don't you give me a red light? Let me know I had to go home. That was finishing. You know,
everyone has a story of when they first came to... Everyone has a story of when they first came to New York. On tomorrow's show, share what you came to New York for and why you stay. Then Mark Hyman joins us to look at the power sport has on young people. And also Sandra Cisneros on the 25th anniversary of the publication of The House on Mango Street. Plus, our latest underreported segments look at Iraq's persecuted gay population and why private contractors who've worked in Iraq have to fight for medical care. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Corcoran. Melissa Eakin is the executive producer. We had help today from Drew Katchin, Alex Holtz, and Angie Sheldon. Debbie Fountain was at the studio controls. I'm Daljit Dhaliwal in for Leonard Lopate. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great day, and we'll see you tomorrow.